Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everybody. This is the Writer's Lounge, show number 79, March 2nd, 2015. And this is the show where we showcase new authors. I'm your host, Tom Riedel. Co-host today is Robin Eduardo, but I'm not sure that she's going to show up. But if she does, we'll bring her on at the regular time. The Writer's Lounge blog can be found over at tomriedel.com. That's tomriedell.com/blog. And over there, you can read all the reviews of all the shows that we've done and all the books that we've reviewed. And in the upper left-hand corner, for your convenience, you'll find the Blog Talk Radio player, and you can click on that and listen to all the reviews and all the shows of the authors that are on that page. Facebook link, of course. You can go over to the Blog Talk Radio site, click on the Facebook link. That'll take you right to the Facebook page. And announcement, we're getting very close to 2,000 likes. So if you get on over there and tell your friends and family about our show and our site, and we really appreciate it. It's very busy over there these days, and we're moving to 2,000, so that's exciting. And also, if you would like to give us a call, or I'm sorry, if you'd like to contact us the old-fashioned way, you can do that at twl11@yahoo.com, and we're also on Twitter. Upcoming guest authors in 2 weeks, we're going to have Dee Scott will be on, and she'll be talking to us about her book, Sent from Heaven. So we're going to wait anxiously for that, and another 2 weeks we'll be on with that. Our sponsor for today is Magic Pen Web Design. Offers its clients a simple, effective, and affordable approach to website design development. And get on over there at magicpenwebdesign.com and let Magic Pen help you to sell that next book with a website design that works its magic for you. And for you people out there that would like to talk to today's guest, who is actually Mary Eatman. She wrote Nine Houses, Chronicles of One Woman's Triumph Over Abuse, Shame, and Neglect. You can give us a call here, toll free at 877-878-1436, and the regular number at 626-213-5613. And normally at this time, we do introduce Robin, and I'm not sure what's going on, but we're not able to have her on right now, and hopefully she will be on at a later time, but we're not sure. So for the time being, I'm going to do it solo. But I got to thinking today a little bit about how life has changed for us. And I'm sure Mary will relate to that when she comes on with us here in a few more minutes. We're probably going to bring her on a little earlier since we have the time. But I've been thinking a lot about writing letters and how we used to sit down and do that to a certain person. And now pretty much it's all electronic. I would just like to know how many of you out there, when's the last time you picked up a letter or picked up a pen and actually wrote a letter? I would be really interested to find out in that. If you have any comments or anything you'd like to add to that, you can email us at, once again, twl11@yahoo.com. I'd love to hear from you and comments about letter writing. And in that category, let's listen to something that was presented a couple years ago. I had it on the show here, and it was by L. Cratchery, and it's called Letter Writing, and it's about 3 minutes and 52 seconds. So after that's done, we'll bring Mary on. We'll have a discussion with her. But for right now, let's hear a little bit more about letter writing.
So I thought I would talk about death. Seemed to be the passion today. Actually, it's not about death. It's inevitable, terrible. But really what I want to talk about is I'm just fascinated by the legacy people leave when they die. That's what I want to talk about. So Art Buchwald left his legacy of humor with a video that appeared soon after he died saying, "Hi, I'm Art Buchwald, and I just died." And Mike, who I met at Galapagos trip, which I won at TED, is leaving notes on cyberspace where he's chronicling his journey through cancer. And my father left me a legacy of his handwriting through letters and a notebook. In the last 2 years of his life, when he was sick, he filled a notebook with his thoughts about me. He wrote about my strengths, weaknesses, and gentle suggestions for improvement. quoting specific incidents, and held a mirror to my life. After he died, I realized that no one writes to me anymore. Handwriting is a disappearing art. I'm all for email and thinking while typing, but why give up old habits for new? Why can't we have letter writing and email exchange in our lives? There are times when I want to trade all those years that I was too busy to sit with my dad and chat with him, and trade all those years for one hug. But too late. But that's when I take out his letters and I read them. And the paper that touched his hand is in mine, and I feel connected to him. So maybe we all need to leave our children with a value legacy and not a financial one. A value for things with a personal touch. An autographed book, a soul-searching letter. If a fraction of this powerful TED audience could be inspired to buy a beautiful paper, John, it'll be a recycled one, and write a beautiful letter to someone they love, we actually may start a revolution where our children may go to penmanship classes. So, what do I plan to leave for my son? I collect autographed books, and those of you authors in the audience know I hound you for them. And CDs too, Tracy. I plan to publish my own notebook. As I witnessed my father's body being swallowed by fire, I sat by his funeral pyre and wrote. I have no idea how I'm going to do it, but I am committed to compiling his thoughts and mine into a book and leave that published book for my son. I'd like to end with a few verses of what I wrote at my father's cremation. And those linguists, please pardon the grammar, because I've not looked at it in the last 10 years. I took it out for the first time to come here. Picture in a frame, ashes in a bottle, boundless energy confined in the bottle, forcing me to deal with reality, forcing me to deal with being grown up. I hear you, and I know that you would want me to be strong. But right now, I'm being sucked down, surrounded, and suffocated by these raging emotional waters, craving to cleanse my soul, trying to emerge on a firm footing one more time, to keep on fighting and flourishing just as you taught me. Your encouraging whispers in my whirlpool of despair, holding me and heaving me to shores of sanity, to live again and to love again. Thank you.
Okay, once again, that was L. Cratchery. And if you want to look her up, it's Cratury. And once again, it's about letters. And I'd be really interested to hear from you again about the letter writing. If you're doing any of that anymore, or if that's gone the way of the dinosaur, I'd like to get your thoughts on that. Once again, TWL11 at yahoo.com. And here we go with the main event tonight. Nine Houses, Chronicles of the Women's Triumph Over Abuse, Shame, and Neglect, was written by Mary Eatman and published by IXH Productions in 2015. You may purchase it at amazon.com/Kindle, and you can visit the author on Facebook. Mary never, this is what Amazon had to say, Mary never thought anything of the young man coming up on her porch to ask her for a cup of water. After all, it was a hot summer afternoon in Birmingham, Alabama. Little did she suspect that her act of kindness would change her life forever. He followed her into her home and attacked her, leaving her with a choice to make at the tender age of 15. She could put everyone at risk and tell her story, or she could live with the fear and pain of what happened and protect her loved ones. Nine Houses shares Mary's inspiring story of adversity, abuse, and escape. It reveals the heart-wrenching tale of a young girl forced into a tumultuous marriage that lasted for 30 years and how she overcame the pain that accompanied the truth of what happened. This is what I had to say about Nine Houses. As I read Nine Houses and learned of the rape and all the horrible abuses that Mary and her children endured, there's one question that kept leaping out at me from the pages. Why would anyone marry such a monster after being raped by him? The answers are there, but in this particular case, one would have to ask 15-year-old Mary to get the honest answer, and some of the reasons are alluded to in the book. You might also want to ask a psychologist who would label the behavior as Stockholm Syndrome. The fact is, Mary is not alone. Over 30,000 women fall victim to SS in the way that Mary did. Once I began to read Mary's story, I could not put the book down. It pulled me into the incredible life of this very inspiring and talented woman. Mary faced a lifetime of terror and unimaginable horrors, and yet, with her faith in God and love of her children, she's made a life worth living. Mary is now into her 80s, and she shows no sign of slowing down. Your skill as a writer shines through in this book as the story flows nicely and is easy to read. And looks like we have two lines here. I'm not sure which one was Mary. I forgot to ask her what her area code was, but let's go with the first one first, and maybe the second one would be somebody who'd like to ask a question. But let's try this right here. And is that you, Mary?
Yes, Mary? I can hear you, Tom.
Hi, Mary. How are you?
I'm just wonderful. Just wonderful. How are you?
I'm doing fine here in Minnesota. It's starting to look like spring, but we're going to have a snowstorm here overnight. So hopefully that'll go away and spring will be on the way soon.
Well, I have the same feeling here. We're not quite done yet. We got a little bit more to go before we can say spring. But it was nice today. The sun was shining and everything, although we got plenty of snow to look at also.
There's something about the sunshine that does it to me in Minnesota during the cold winters. I'm used to being in central New York at Syracuse, New York. And back there, a lot of the skies are cloudy most of the time. And here in Minnesota, we have bright blue sunshine, which even though the temperatures are hovering sometimes around 15 to 20 below zero, they certainly do put you in a better mood than having clouds. So that's my take on winter, but I'm ready for summer. I'm ready to get up to my camp. I'm ready to do all the fun things that we do out there in the summer months of the year. So, Mary, it's just a pleasure to have you on, and I want to say that it took a lot of courage to do what you did, and I really want to thank you for reaching out to all the other people out there that maybe have been in an abusive relationship such as yours. You're an amazing woman, and I really, really appreciate what you've done here. I was wondering if you could read an excerpt from your book.
Okay, I can do that. I did. I looked at one chapter that I would like to just read a little bit about it, because basically we read this book so many times I really don't want to read it. Well, we had to get it together, but you know, I would read something that's not too bad, and I can just read this part. It was chapter 30. It's the term turning over a new leaf. It states, by February 1973, Miguel, Joe, and David were all married with their own families. Those are my boys. since we had no other place to go, we were still living with Tab and her husband. That was my oldest daughter and her husband. And after the gun incident, which is in my book, and I'll tell you all about it, I finally knew that it was no longer safe to remain under the same roof with that man, this man, rather. Bill and Tab was more than understanding about my situation, so much so I could have cried because of the emotion that overtook me. Even though they had not too long ago gotten married themselves, they accepted us into their home with no problem, nor with any hint of hesitation. I told them up front that if they weren't able to let me stay with them long enough so that I could get back on my feet, then they might as well leave me where I was. I said I would take my chances and hope that I would still be living by the time the rest of the kids was old enough to live on their own. But Tab and Bill would not have any of that. They assured me that I would be fine and that the kids would be also. It was a bit crowded for a while, but we made the best of it. As I said, Tab, my daughter, was pregnant when we arrived. She had been feeling sick during that time, so we stepped right in to help her and husband. I cooked and did the budget, and my girls, they cleaned. Meanwhile, I continued working the summer of the school cafeteria, not knowing what I was going to do during the summer, because at the end of the school period, then you didn't have a job for a while. But we made the best of our situation while we were staying there. I remember one Saturday morning, I was staring out of the kitchen window at the kids playing near the maple tree. It was a maple tree in the backyard. And that tree brought me a sense of peace that I almost felt as if I had lived in another city. When I first moved in with Tab and Bill, I had very little, but they shared whatever they had with me. While staying there, I continued to maintain as much as possible the routine that the kids was used to. Luckily, the older kids was able to attend that same school as Tab lived in that school district. But one day, Wardine was lurking about around the front of the school like some psycho on the prowl for new victims. He was determined to force me to come back to him, and I was just as determined not to do so. During that time, I would take them to school and pick them up. I thank God that Dinah, that was my other daughter, spotted her father out in the front of the school and had enough wisdom to call me to let me know. I immediately made a beeline up to the school. I told Dinah to get a Ree and meet me in the back of the school. Well, Wardine realized that we had blocked him from taking the kids, he resorted to full-fledged threats. And from then on, if anyone ever left the house for any reason, those who stayed behind would run to the front window to watch as if that person was fading, until that person faded away down the street. Basically, by that time, Wardine had become a stalker. He would park at the end of the block in hopes of catching one of the younger kids or me off guard. Wardine had become increasingly enraged over the fact that we had left him, and he blamed Tab for it. But that was one problem. The truth is, he was a coward. We figured that out. I don't know why, but it's a fact. He would not cross the line that Tab had drawn. Whenever he would call the house to harass me, Tab would be on the other line listening to make sure that he would be interrupted. His plans would be interrupted. I'll just stop right there. That was just a little part when you first left from that situation.
Mary, I have several questions, as you know, to talk to you about. But it looks like we have a caller on the line here from area code. We don't have a name. I wish we had a name. If we had it like we would normally have it in a regular radio studio, we'd have a call taker and we'd have the name up on the board. But all I have here is the area code of 520. So area code 520, I'm going to bring you on the line right now, and you're on with Mary Eatman and Tom Riddell. Do you have a question or comment? Hello?
Say hello. Say hello.
Hello?
Hello, can I help you? Well, what would you like to talk about?
If this is the same 520, that is my sister. Mary is my sister. I live out here in Arizona.
I recognize it.
You recognize my voice?
Yeah, I recognize the error code also.
Yeah. Hey, I just wanted to let you know that I have the book, and I've had some of my friends buy the book, and we've all read it, and they all think that you were very brave in coming out, and I'm especially brave, proud that you came out. I'm glad to hear that, you know, there's a lot of stuff in that book I never knew. I had no idea. even though we lived in the same household, you know, for all those years, I had no idea. So I'm very proud that you was brave enough to come out.
Well, thank you so much, Aaron. I could keep a secret. Is that right? I did keep a secret.
Well, you can. You kept a very good secret. I remember visiting you a couple times, you know, while all this stuff was going on, and I had no idea. Even when I used to ride the bus with you, when you was a bus driver, you know, when all that stuff was going on, I had no idea that this was going on.
Wow.
Yeah, those are things that I just kept to myself. One of the questions at the radio studio had asked me, why did I decide to write the book? But it was time to write it. And timing is everything. And you can't do things before the right time, otherwise it won't come together. And I think this time that I wrote the book is the perfect time. I started not to when they start having a lot of debates on who got raped and stars and sports people and all that. But I was encouraged to do it anyway because mine was still a little different from what those people were saying. But I'm glad I did it. Now I feel better because I feel relieved now.
This was a perfect time to do it because, you know, so much of that stuff is happening, and I now have my own kids. You know, I have two girls, and I have a granddaughter who's just 10 years old, and I want her to know about this stuff, and I want her to know about you. And whoever else that think that you did the wrong thing, forget them. They have no idea what they're talking about.
Wow.
Thank you so much.
Mary, I guess you're going to hold on here, keep the gentleman on the line here. Who is this exactly, Mary, that we're talking to here? I didn't quite get the first part of it.
His name is in the book, too. I don't want to say who it is, but I know this person.
Okay,
and
so
his name is in
he had mentioned that he lived with you, so it must have been quite the surprise, as he had mentioned, to actually read about what you had endured all those years. So, caller, thank you so much for calling, and I'm sure Mary thanks you for reading the book and doing, again, what she did is quite remarkable and very courageous. So thank you again, caller, for calling.
All right, thank you.
Thank
you, Mary. I really love you. I love you to death.
I love you back, and thank you so much.
Okay, bye-bye.
Thank you. Yep, bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay. Wow, that was kind of fit right in with my question about not only writing, but also how did you discuss this with your family? I mean, not just in writing. You must have had to have some sort of a discussion with somebody before you decided to pick up the pen and start to write. Is that correct, Mary?
Yes, it was. This started. I think it was in 2011. An incident happened with my former ex-husband. He's passed now. He went on. But it came to me. Wardine, he's in the book. It came to me one morning that I should tell him what he did to me and my children, or our children, I should say, because I never said anything to him in all those years. I never said anything to anyone. I just kept it to myself. But when I awake that morning, it was almost like a vision. I don't know if it was a vision or a dream, but it was in my mind. I know that. And it said I should tell him what he did to me because he never apologized or anything. So I said, okay, I'll do that. I was thinking to myself. So my daughter that comes over, she would come over once a week and we'd have a little time together. And I told her when she came that I needed to tell her father something. Now, at the time, he was sick. I didn't know he was that near to the end. So, I mean, we get sick and we get better. But anyway, she said she'd take me over there. And so we went over to see him. And that's, I had wrote a note, a letter like, because I didn't want to forget what I wanted to tell him. I also told him in the letter, I didn't come for him to confess, admit that he did it, or deny it. He didn't have to do anything. I just wanted to tell him what was in my heart. And I did, and he didn't say anything. And so after the conversation, you know, happened, then the kids, and they were so shocked, they just didn't know what to say. But they began to say, Mother, you should write a book. And I said, oh, I didn't need to write a book. But anyway, they kept talking about it. So I said, well, maybe I would. And it was really hard for me to start even thinking about it, because so many things I had just buried it. I didn't want to think about it, so I just had to think about it. And as I kept thinking about it, then things start coming. Things start coming back to me, little by little, and then I would tell my daughter. Excuse me, can I have popped up? And I tell her, and just a minute, please.
Okay. And while we're waiting for Mary there, I think she's taking a drink or whatever to kind of relax her throat or whatever. But if you'd like to give us a call here at the Writer's Lounge, you can do that at 626-213-5613. And also toll-free at 877-878-1436. And then this is, again, the Writer's Lounge, and we're talking to Mary, who wrote Nine Houses. And Mary, you back with us there?
I'm okay now. What I want to say, after I had that urgency to tell him, and then they encouraged me to write the book, and then we started to write it. So it was pretty hard at first because I couldn't even remember the things that I need to say. But my daughter was listening, because in the book it would tell you that this is Mary Eatman's book as told to Julie Eatman. That's my daughter. She actually penned it for me. But and then we started writing it in 2012. And we'd write it and put it down, and finally toward in 2014, we decided we had to really get serious and push forward. And that's what we did, and we finally got the book wrote.
Wow, that's amazing. And I imagine probably to sit down and try to bring up those memories were both hard, maybe possibly emotionally, and also the ability to pull up a memory like that after so many years, you kind of lose it. But I think with what you went through, I think a lot of those images and a lot of those memories are very vivid in your mind. Would that be correct to say, Mary?
That is very correct. That is very correct. And it's hard to have to listen. I mean, to remember some of those things, I would rather not. But once I got the courage, then I just went forward. And now it's not so hard. I said, because it's out there now and I can't take it back. So I just go forward with whatever, it leads to. But I really believe that it's okay, because I've gotten a lot of comments, and women especially, saying that they're glad that I did come out with it. It helped them, and different people can find different things in the book that they can relate to, and my family, some of my friends, and some people I don't even know, they can see something in the book that they can relate to, and that makes me feel good.
That's good. And as I wrote in my interview or in my review of your book, the most prominent question that comes to my mind, and I'm sure to many others, would be, why did you feel compelled to marry a man who did this to you? I guess I'm asking the 15-year-old here, not the 83-year-old, but what compelled you to marry him?
Well, that's a good question. And at the time, I was so fearful. Since then, I realize now he just should not be that fearful, because it makes you make some strange decisions. But however, at that time, that's what I felt, because I felt threatened, I was hurt, I was shamed, and I was angry. And so I just felt that I had to do something to protect my family and to keep my stability also, because it was really frightening. Even today, that is a heinous crime. It really is. And I know some women since then, they've gone through that, and they didn't come out so well the way I did, because that's why. Now, I don't know, this is what kept brought me through, is having a relationship with the Lord. I'm very spiritual, and I'm not ashamed of it. And having a relationship with him, that helped me so much. But other than that, I know I would not have made it. But I did have a very close relationship with the Lord, and I didn't have to use any kind of drugs, and I didn't drink, and I didn't have a nervous breakdown. And I know women who did that. They actually had nervous breakdowns, and they got raped. They got raped on the job. Everything was going wrong, but the Lord just kept me. He just kept me covered, and I'm glad about it.
Yeah, that's amazing. I just can't get my head around it. And we talked a little bit, and I know you mentioned it in your book, Stockholm Syndrome comes to mind as far as probably the psychological or the clinical reason for what you did. Have you read up on Stockholm Syndrome, and does that really fit what happened with you?
Well, yeah, and to be truthfully, Stockholm Syndrome was something new that we did research and found out, which let me know that I was not the only person who did such a thing as, you know, clinging to the assailant. In this instance, the assailant was not a total stranger that I'd never seen or heard of before. He was a local person that lived in the neighborhood, although he was, at the time, he was away in the Navy, but he did live in our neighborhood. So it wasn't like he was somebody I'd never seen before. So I guess that was another reason that
right.
made me not afraid, and I just took to him. But anyway, I really was very upset about it. And I thought, you know, he just, it was so wrong for him to do me like that. It wasn't that I did anything to even entice him, and it was just wrong. But
right.
as far as Stockholm Syndrome, it was research that we did, and people can also look it up online, and they can find out actually exactly what it is, because I can't just really explain it because it's new to me also. What I've learned about it, it explained that the victims who are taken against their will, raped and verbally and physically abused, yet go and stay with their assailant, generally use this technique to ensure their survival, which sets the foundation for a psychological disorder known as Stockholm Syndrome. And also it stated that it had been recorded nearly 30,000 people, mainly women, have fallen victim to this old disorder. It's a disorder.
Sure. Yeah.
But like I was saying, you know, sometimes when a person is so fearful, it's just not good to be too fearful. But, you know, we have somebody to back us up. Now, you don't have to keep things to yourself, and you can't crowd, and people will come and help you.
It's amazing the human body and the coping mechanisms that help us and move us through those hard, difficult times. It's sort of more of a detachment of yourself to the abusive person. You've sort of moved away from that person, so you're not really feeling the pain that person is feeling, which is actually you, but you've kind of removed yourself from that. But what I also find interesting is, you know, you lived with your husband for many, many years. Besides the bad, there must have been something good in your husband. And what was it?
Well, you know, actually, it was not all bad. And there were many good times. As a matter of fact, I was visiting his nieces from his sister's side. And they were speaking about when they were small that we did have a lot of good times. Our children were very, very talented. We could make a party with ourselves. There's a lot of times you would come by on the weekend and you'd think we were having a party. There was nobody there but the children and me, and he probably was in bed or something. So we learned how to cope with the worst, and we liked being having fun, and we did a lot of things together. I had to be creative because we had a lot of children and I didn't have money to just spend, you know, so we had to use our creativity. But the kids was very, very talented. They sang, they played the piano, they danced, and we just do this inside the house. And so that way it kept the house as much as peaceful as possible. But there were times when, and he was in and out. Most of the time he would be okay. He was a comical person, a very talented person, but he never used his talent to do anything, you know, to make it work. And so the children sort of inherited their talent from him, I suppose, and myself, because I used to could sing. But to get past all this bad stuff, we had to do something to make life livable. Because otherwise, I guess they would, I don't know what they would do, but I never had to get them out of jail. They turned out very good citizens. That's all I can say about that.
Yeah. Did your husband ever apologize, Mary?
Never. And that was the reason why I wrote the letter at the 11th hour, because he never apologized to me. So when I was felt in my spirit to tell him what he'd done, it really gave him time to really go before the Lord, I believe. My daughter liked me to talk about these other things that brought me through. If he never apologized to me, it was okay. But he did go before the Lord because we're all going to go before the Lord. And so he had time to make it up with the Lord, and that was the most important thing. So he never had a chance to apologize to me.
Yeah, talk to us about forgiveness. You mentioned your very strong connection with God, and how does that process work, and how did that process work for you to get to the point of forgiving?
Forgiveness is the most important factor that any person could have in their life, because you have to forgive people to get that stress off of you. As long as you don't forgive them, you're carrying them around with you every day. You're staying angry because every time you think about it, you're thinking about them. You say you don't want to think about them, but you're thinking about them all the time. I chose not to keep thinking about him. I like to be happy. I want to laugh. I want to smile. I want to feel good about myself. So my best thing was to forgive him, and that is what is taught in the scripture. And most people, they're just so angry, they don't want to do it because they'll say, well, you don't know what he did to me or what she did to me. And that's true. But I know we still have to forgive. To me, it was such a relief just to let that go. Let it go. Because I don't want to worry about that every day of my life, you know, what he did and repeat it over and over. I didn't want to meditate on that. I wanted to move on with my life and do the best I could.
Yes. God bless you for that.
And working. I'm sorry. Say it again.
Yeah, I said God bless you for that. To do that, it takes an awful lot. I know a lot of people believe that forgiving somebody means that you have to continue in a relationship with them. That's not true. To find it in your own heart to be able to forgive. And you're not doing it just for them. You're doing it for yourself. So you don't have to carry along the anger and the grief and all of those negative feelings that you have, because at the end of the day, we all have to lay down and go to bed. And if we have anger inside of us and we have all that turmoil, we can't live like you said. We can't get on and be happy in our life and laugh and do all the things that you've done since turned the corner in your life. So that's very important, I think, and it's very important for people to try to understand what forgiveness really is. It's not about making the deed okay. It's about, you know, letting the other person know that you're not going to live with all that negativity.
You know, because another thing, unforgiveness, it causes more than just something in your mind. It can cause your whole body to suffer because it keeps your adrenaline up, which spills over on the other organs, and that's why a lot of people are sick from different things like that. I'm 84 years old tomorrow for sure. I don't take any kind of medication. I have more fun and I have more energy than a whole lot of people, and I'm thankful for that because I did truly forgive him in my heart. You know, I didn't want to continue to hold everything against him and think about that day and night. I didn't want to meditate on that. I wanted to be free so I could live my own life. Like I tell everybody, I said, you only have one life to live, and you can't read a day that's gone. It's gone. You have to do everything you can when you can, while you can. You know, you can't retrace it and bring it back. If you miss the day, then that's the day gone. So I chose to forgive the person. And like you said, I can forgive them. I didn't have to trust them again, and I didn't. I didn't have to stay with them. Forgiveness is not necessary. You got to, cling to that person. Yeah, and
right.
So I wanted to do something. It was my own life, so I forgave him. We both stayed in the same city. It didn't bother me. I didn't bother him, and he didn't bother me. So it was a good play, and I didn't try to teach my kids against him, because if anything he did to them, let them, because I knew they were going to know sooner or later, so I let them find out for themselves.
Sure.
And I went on to enjoy my life. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I've got to say, too, I meant to mention at the top of the show that I do know that tomorrow is your birthday, so I would like to wish you a very happy birthday, Mary, and I hope you have lots of cake, lots of fun, and I wish I was there with you, because I'd give you a great big hug.
Well, thank you so much. I'm going to receive it, too. Yeah. But, you know, getting back to that forgiveness, because people just don't see it like that. It's, well, you know, he did this or she did that. And I just, you have to get over it. You just have to move on if you want to live your life. And you're still trying to live somebody else's life because you've gotten involved in their problem or whatever's causing them to do what they do. And now you can't go far because you're still doing it. I'm going back to school. I went to college. I didn't get my master's because I was trying to help my mother and father. They had gotten older. But I got my bachelor's degree in biblical studies and Christian counseling. That's what I do now, the counsel of young women or men if they want to hear it, you know. And so that forgiveness was the best thing that I could have done. Not hold that against him.
I have had some turmoil in my life, and I find myself sometimes wishing I had a time machine to go back and possibly change some things, but sometimes when reflecting on life, we look back and wonder if we would indeed change anything about how we lived. You know, we learn valuable lessons from the good and the bad in life. Would you do anything differently than the way your life turned out?
Well, one thing I wouldn't do, I wouldn't marry the assailant, that's for sure.
Okay.
I would not do that.
Yeah.
I've learned it that there's other ways you can do something different. And another thing I did do, which I'm sorry, I sort of took things in my own hand. I didn't allow my father to protect his family. I was so trying to look out for my family, my mother and father and brothers. I didn't want anything to happen to them. So I just decided I'd just take the brunt and walk with it. But I should have allowed my father to protect his family.
Uh-huh.
And that's one thing I'm sorry I didn't do. I didn't do that.
Yep. And looking at your book, and just before we came on, I did go back and watch your video. I've watched that several times. I find that extraordinary, the way you've been marketing your book. And I'd like to talk a little bit now about your book and your marketing of it. Who's helped you? Have you had help with this? It's just incredible what you've done.
Well, I have to give credit to my daughter and my son. He's helping her. But my daughter actually, we started out with a ghostwriter, and we were not satisfied at all with the way it was going. So one day my daughter said, let me have it. I think I can handle it. And she did. And the first paragraph she wrote, I cried because it was just so painful. And after that, she kept writing, and she helped me. She marketed. She made sure that everything was polished up, but she just about drove my little son nuts. Because if he didn't do it right, you got to do it again. It's not right. It's not right. Dad, we don't want that. So he kept working with it, and so it turned out so well. And then she did all the research of looking where she could get help, who she needed to go to, and just she just did a wonderful job. And I really thank God for her. She really did a wonderful job. I mean, she was persistent. And then she got my other daughter that lives in she lives out west. And she would help her when she got, you know, she needed a little help. I remember that they used to stay up all night sometime researching and rereading and redoing. And I said, oh, my goodness, I don't think I could do all that. But they really did and turned out really well. And the Lord just directed her and helped her find all the people that she needed to help her for things that she couldn't do. And I thought that turned out really well.
Yeah, I've had over 100 authors on this program are close to it now, and I've reviewed several books, close to 85 or 90 for this show alone. And I have very rarely come across a book that's so well put together and the marketing is so clear and so visually attractive, along with the actors in your video. It just amazed me. So I would say to your daughter, if she doesn't have a job in marketing, she should probably look into that because she's done an exceptional job, and I think she stands up close to the top of any of the authors that I have had on the program here. So I want to give her kudos for the work she's done for you, and I hope that she continues because there's a real need for that kind of thing. A lot of the authors will write a book and think that their job is done, but it's not. It's just begun. And as you know, there's a lot of work after you've written a book. You're doing a radio show now, and I'm sure you have other interviews that you've done. So it's a lot of work to get your book and get your word out there. So again, your daughter did a fine job, and I hope she continues doing what she's doing.
She's got love hearing that. That would encourage her because, see, in doing this book, she has discovered a talent in her that she did not know she had. She wasn't aware that she could do this. But she went to work, and her persistence and her enthusiasm helped to bring this forward. She didn't know she could write, but now she's already got people in line to want her to help them with their book.
Oh, that's fantastic.
She's going to stop and really just pursue this career because this can be a career for her.
You mentioned her name earlier, but I think you said her name sort of quickly, or I didn't catch it. Would that be Julie?
Yeah, that's Julie. She's the one that's on the book as told to Julie. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah, and I have had the pleasure of connecting with Julie on Facebook, and she seems like a lovely person. So good for you, Julie. Keep it up. Getting back to your life, Mary, you told us another story after you left your husband about becoming a bus driver. I found that extremely interesting because I at one time wanted to be a bus driver, and I've had a couple of my friends actually become bus drivers, and I know that that can be a very challenging job, especially where you drove. But can you tell us a little bit about that?
Well, you were very right on that. It was a very challenging job, and just coming out of a bad marriage and get into something like that, I said, my goodness, I don't know. It was the Lord who helped me because that was very strenuous, and the hours was just unbelievable, and having to learn all the routes and different things like that, and then having to deal with so many different types of people. But the Lord just helped me. He just helped me to make it. I did it because of Him. And like I said, I didn't end up with having to take some kind of pills to keep me calm down or anything. But if it had not been for Him, I'm sure I would not have made it. But the job itself was quite a challenge, and it was very exciting, very exciting. One of these days, some of us, one of the bus drivers, we're going to write a book about bus drivers. It's really something to hear about.
And there's a connection here that I think is quite amazing. Would be Rosa Parks sat in the front of the bus. And not only did she do that, but you drove the bus. So the civil rights movement, or the racial tension that we had back in the 60s, I want to ask you a little bit about that. Did that impact your life very much at all, or how did you handle all of that strife?
Well, I was living right through that, but at the time, when in the 60s, you know, I wasn't even thinking that I would ever have to even consider doing anything because I'd always been a homemaker. I stayed home with my children, and because it was too big a job to try to work and take care of them too, so I said, well, I'll just stay and just take care of them. That was a full-time job. So, but the affirmative action that came in the early 70s, that's what really helped me. That's why I say timing is everything. If I'd have left in the 60s, I would have just been from hand to mouth. But leaving when I did, and I really give the glory to the Lord, it was right on time. When I went on the job, that was very timely. When I left the job, it was timely. It seems like everything I do, when I'm seeking a counsel from the Lord, it works out in my favor. But I can't do it by myself, and I didn't do it by myself. It was just timely thing I did, and it was just right. But see, when the affirmative action came on, the women that had not been able to get jobs, and these jobs was mainly males, you know. But after that, it became, they had to open doors for us, for women. And I was one of the first women bus drivers to drive in the city of Detroit. And but, you know, a lot of things that happened prior to that that kind of prepared me because my late ex-husband, he likes to tinker with all kinds of trucks and would have me driving all kinds of trucks. I can't even call the name of them.
Internationals.
And I could do it. And so that really helped me to be able to handle that bus right away. It didn't take any time. I remember the first time we went out on the track to was studying, they take you out to a place where you got a lot of space and you're just trying you out. And I was the one that was able to drive the bus back home with the instructor standing right with me so he could grab the wheel if he thought was necessary. But I drove, and there was guys on the bus, and he wouldn't even let them drive it home. He let me drive it home, so that let me know I can do this. And so, but like I said, it was a good job. The people were so, I was talking to some drivers, retired drivers today, and we could go right back. We just come off of work and start talking about what happened on the bus. That's the kind of job it was.
Yeah, a lot of people, a lot of interesting. It's a people job. And I had a laugh when I was reading your book because I imagine the looks you were getting from a lot of the men that saw you, not only a woman but a black woman driving a bus, I can imagine was probably comical to you and made you giggle or probably scared the crap out of you. But I found that fun reading about that.
I think it was both of it scared me, and it was comical, too, because you just never knew what was going to happen when you opened that door. You know, you might get something threatening. I remember one guy, he was coming up late. Well, you know, we have a time schedule, and I can't just stand and wait to see if somebody's going to come to the bus stop. You're supposed to be there. So I pulled off. I looked, nobody's there, and he came up from behind, and he was banging on the back part of the bus, and then when he got to the front, why did you open that door? I said, mister, I'm out here to pick up passengers, and if I see them, I pick them up. He heard me. Well, I said, oh, that's okay. I didn't have no confrontation with him. But because, I mean, I don't know you in the back of the bus. I'm at the front. You have to come to the front where I can see you. But it really was an exciting, interesting job. It was dangerous, too. It was everything wrapped in one.
Wow, that's great. That's great. I love it. Mary, we got a little over 7 minutes left here on the show. Time really does fly when you're having fun here, and I'm certainly enjoying this. What's that?
Okay.
I'm having fun.
Man, I'm glad I'm enjoying it, too.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. And now, will you be writing another book?
Oh, yeah, I got two online. I got a children's book I've been wanting to write forever. I got the draft already ready, and I'm going to get my daughter to help type it up for me. And then I got another book that I want to write. It's called Short Stories, because it's a lot of different little small incidents, but not enough to write a book about. So I think if I put them all together, I can make a little short stories, and we'd have a book out of it, because there's a lot of things that happen. They're really funny things, some of them were, and I want to do that one. And then, incidentally, my daughter wants me to do a cookbook. I don't know if I'm that good of a cook, but she says she's going to help me, so we'll do that, too.
Okay. So, anyway, we have now about 6 minutes left here, and I want to give you a little bit of time to talk to others that might have been in an abusive relationship or any life advice that you'd like to give, because I hold on to all of that. I know when I listen to somebody who has had the experiences that you have, I really would like to hear a little bit more about what you would like to say.
Well, I would like to just say some things that helped me through the hard times, because right now I just feel so grateful. It's like nothing ever bad ever happened to me, but it did. It was the choices that I made that helped me to get through this. Also, I would like to thank those little actors, the actor and actress that worked on their video. I thought they was great, and hope that they'll have a career. They're young people. I hope they'll have a career after this. But anyway, some of the things I want to say that I would like to leave with people in a bad relationship or something happened to them, you know, we have to get past it if we intend to live. And like I said before, I would like to say a person don't have to be so afraid to speak out about what happened to them, because you do have some backup now. The system will do something. They just don't let you just get hurt and nothing happens. And some things how you can overcome the crisis in your life. And the first thing I would say is honor God with prayer and trust. trust the Lord to get you through this dilemma, because you can go to a psychiatrist, and I'm not putting them down. I know they do good work, but this will help me. If you just trust him, he will take you there. He will take you through anything you need to go through. And like we already talked about, you have to forgive the other person. We've all done something that we should not have done, or said something, or thought something, and we want to be forgiven, so you got to forgive other people also and give them a chance. You have to make choices that you're going to live your one life anyway. There is life after rape or whatever you've been through. You can still, you have a purpose here, and there's a reason. I mean, bad things happen to good people. It just does, and you know that is the truth. You have to encourage yourself with positive thinking and words, and you can't meditate on the bad things all day and night. You have to choose what you want to think on. And if you have a dream, and most of us do, a dream, a passion, you have to call it your dream and passion. Although you realize that you've had a setback, you can still overcome and move forward. You can still see the sun while it's raining. I had a dream. I wanted to be a singer. I could sing. I had a beautiful voice, but I've laid it aside, and so now I can't sing. So you don't have to stop because something happened. Just pick it up and go on. And you have to have someone or something to hold on to until you can stand on your feet again when something bad happens. I chose to follow the Lord. And he helped me until I could stand again. And if you can find some person that can listen and enable you to go forward. You know, that's what psychiatrists is for, to listen. But you can find a good friend. Because a lot of people are good listeners. And if you just have a good listener, it'll help you get through that till you can get all this out of your system. You have to choose to be happy, joyful, and you have to live expecting the best. And you don't have to wait for somebody else to help you make you happy. You make your own self happy. Do it yourself. Because other people don't know what you need or want, and they got their own problems. So you have to think about what you can do to make yourself happy. And that's just about all I got to say about that.
Okay. Very good advice, Mary. It's been a pleasure. I'm looking forward to your next book. I don't care if it's a cookbook or any kind of a book. I want to read more about what Mary Eatman has to say. And before we leave, where can they find you on the internet?
Well, we have a website at 9houses.net. And once they get on there, you click on the menu. Each menu you click, you scroll. Click and scroll. It tells you everything you need to know about the book, where to get it, how much it costs, and everything.
Very good. Mary, God bless you. And say hello to Julie. Give her a good kudo for all that she's done. And I appreciate your work or her work. And we will talk to you another time, I'm sure.
Okay, thank you so much for having me, and God bless you, too.
Thank you, Mary. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye.
Well, that ends our show number 79 on the Writer's Lounge. Next time around, Dee Dee Scott will be here with her book. That's in 2 weeks. Until then, let the story begin.
In the middle of the day, your faith and your fences have been blown away. You're down in the cellar and you've locked yourself in. Ah, but it looks like it's rainbow weather again. It looks like it's rainbow weather again. Storm clouds apart and the sun will peek in. The rain will roll out wind, and it looks like it's rainbow weather again. One beautiful morn, he said, Noah, get ready, for the sky will be torn. Build as I tell you, save what you can. Then wait while the rainbow weather begins. It looks like it's rainbow weather again. Storm clouds apart and the sun will peek in. The rain will roll out on a westerly wind. And it looks like it's rainbow weather again. Trouble will come, but trouble will go. You're living in fear, but what do you know? You know that the sun's always coming then. You know there'll be rainbow weather again. It looks like it's rainbow weather again. The storm clouds apart and the sun will peek in.